Good morning, and welcome to the Irish Data Protection Commission's podcast into the recent cookie sweep report. I'm MB Donnelly, and with me today is Elaine Edwards, who I think it is fair to say, Elaine, you held the pen on the recent cookie sweep report.
Good morning, MB. That's correct, I did indeed. But we had a team of people working on this over several months, so we put considerable work into it, and we've produced some guidance on foot of the report as well.
And I think we're all very grateful that you're able to join us this morning and to delve into the report in a little bit greater depth in the podcast, as we try and provide this as an additional support to people while we are all dealing with challenging times and working in a remote environment for many, many people. But this is a way of helping people to engage with the contents of that report and the guidance note that you've prepared as well.
Yes, indeed. Delighted to do that now, but here is the next few minutes.
I think it is fair to say that some of the findings might be surprising to some of the data controllers and data protection officers who are operating out in the wider world.
I think that's correct, MB. I can give you a little bit of background about the sweep and how we came to do it, if that's okay with you. I'll start by maybe telling you what we did and where we were coming from. The DPC, back in August of last year, I suppose, started to prepare for a broad kind of compliance exercise called a cookie sweep, where we wanted to examine controllers' websites, for example, in terms of how they were complying with the e-privacy regulations, which implement the law in relation to cookies. This law in Ireland is the statutory instrument 336 of 2011, which will mean nothing to a lot of people, but it is actually the piece of legislation that transposes into Irish law the e-privacy directive of 2002, which was amended in 2009. This law has very specific purposes. It governs the privacy and electronic communications, such as people's communications on their mobile phones, for example. But it also has an extended scope in terms of covering the area of, say, unsolicited communication. So, for example, people getting unsolicited texts and emails and so on. And also it covers the law in relation to cookies. So this would be cookies, as a lot of people will be aware, they're small files, often little text files, that are placed on your computer when you visit a website, and they have particular functions and they help websites to work properly in a lot of cases. But there are types of cookies that can also be quite privacy intrusive, as in when you visit a website and these cookies are placed on your equipment, they can track people's browsing behavior across the internet and even over across multiple devices. So people might have become more aware of the use of cookies, I suppose, and tracking over a period of the last few years where there has been an expansion of the so-called ad tech industry. So where we were coming from was not really in a broader examination of the ad tech sector per se. We wanted to look at how controllers are implementing the law on cookies, whether they're providing clear and comprehensive information to users when they visit their websites, for example, whether they are providing users with the opportunity to give consent for the use of those cookies and those tracking technologies, which is very important because controllers are not permitted to place those cookies and tracking devices on people's terminal equipment, as it's called in the legislation, without their consent. Now, there are particular exemptions here, so that's what we also wanted to examine, is what cookies are controllers placing on users' devices, and are they obtaining consent, and are they providing adequate information before those cookies are placed on people's devices?
And Elaine, just before we dig into the findings of the report itself, I wonder, for context, would you be able to give me and the listeners a sense of the kind of numbers that were involved in this particular sweep, what the response rates were, and maybe how you graded their compliance?
Yeah, okay. We started with 40 controllers. We wrote out to 40 controllers in August. Of those 40, one controller did not respond to us at all, including several reminders, and we will be following up with that controller. A second controller was given a deferral, in effect, from participating in the sweep because that controller was just about to launch a brand new website in the weeks to come. So we felt it wasn't really appropriate or possibly wasn't fair at that stage to ask them to complete the exercise in respect of a website that was going to be superseded by a new one. So the 38 responses that came back, for our own methodology, really, we decided we would examine each of them and grade them according to a red, amber, green grading. So we gave 20 of the 38 an amber rating, so it was kind of somewhere, they all had compliance issues. We only gave 2 a green rating, I should say, and we gave 12 a red rating, which was very substantial compliance issues arising in respect of those particular controllers, I think we could say. But there were compliance issues on all of the websites, in particular around the area, I suppose, of the use of implied consent for the use of cookies, which is not valid.
And were there particular sectors that you focused on when compiling the report?
We took a broad range of sectors and controllers. We covered about 40 controllers initially across a range of sectors. We took fairly prominent websites of controllers in, say, the retail, insurance, banking, public sector, and so on, just to get a broad idea of what they were doing. Now, we will, at the end of this exercise, we will be expanding the reach, I suppose, the sweep, to the extent that we want to reach out to other controllers who didn't participate in it. So, you know, other controllers, if you are going out through the DPO network to publicise this report, I suppose, controllers may very well get correspondence from us in the coming weeks and months, where we examine more websites, and we are now going to ask controllers to take a look at their practices.
Okay, so this is an activity that isn't necessarily a new activity on the part of the DPC.
MB, no, this isn't a new activity by the DPC. We have certainly carried out such sweeps in the past. I haven't been involved in one myself in the past, but we have carried them out either alone as Data Protection Authority or as part of the Global Privacy Enforcement Network, or GPEN, which is a network of data protection authorities or regulators. We haven't previously published such a detailed report on the outcomes of the cookie sweep, and I think that has attracted some considerable attention from controllers in recent weeks. We have certainly had some correspondence from some of the controllers who participated in the sweep. Many of them, all of them, I have to say, are anxious to comply and to see how they can go about complying with the regulations and with the applicable legislation here. So we have actually produced a guidance note alongside our report, which has been distributed to all the controllers who took part in this sweep. And we put a lot of work into the guidance note. It's probably more detailed than guidance we have published in the past in relation to cookies. So we hope that this is going to be of great assistance to controllers in helping them to comply with the regulations and with the applicable legislation when they come down to examining their practices and areas such as how they present information to users, for example. We do think it will be of assistance, but they do need to be sitting down with the right people in their organisations. That would probably include data protection officer, their technical people, top management people in a lot of cases, and sometimes with third-party providers, because bear in mind that not all controllers actually operate and manage their own websites. In some cases, they actually outsource that to third parties. But we do hope this guidance will be of good assistance to all controllers and not just those who took part in this sweep.
Which I think is really very important, Elaine, and it's worth pointing out to listeners who may not be aware of it, that both the report itself and the guidance note are available on the Data Protection Commission's website, and that you've put quite an extensive amount of work into developing that guidance so that data controllers have a fairly solid starting point from which to assess their own processing activities around websites, particularly in relation to cookies. And having looked, I suppose, at how to promote and increase compliance in that area, could you maybe take us through a little bit how the DPC enforces these regulations?
Yes. People may be familiar with prosecutions that the DPC sometimes takes in relation to unsolicited electronic communications, for example, unsolicited text messages or spam messages, or unsolicited communications by email, for example. And these are also covered in the e-privacy regulations. So people may be quite familiar with that area. I suppose we probably have not been as active in taking enforcement action against controllers in the area that regulates the use of cookies, which also falls under the e-privacy regulations under Regulation 5. I think this is going to change, and it'll change particularly in light of how cookies have been central to the evolution of the whole ad industry in recent years. Because when these regulations were written and enacted back in 2011, which seems like such a long time ago, I think we could not have imagined at that stage how powerful the ad tech sector would become within just a few short years. So while this particular sweep wasn't an examination of the wider ad tech model per se, it's certainly aimed at taking action or looking at compliance among controllers, you know, where they don't comply with the relevant requirements of the privacy regulations. And also, it's important to say, the applicable provisions of GDPR, because this is actually a slightly tricky area, because controllers in some cases may not believe that their use of cookies and other tracking technologies on their websites actually constitutes processing of personal information or personal data, rather. We did get some responses during the sweep to that effect, that controllers, I think particularly smaller controllers, responded to us to the effect that we're not processing any personal data here. It's cookies, it's not identifiable. We can't identify any individual data subjects here. But actually the GDPR does apply as well as the privacy regulations. So where are we taking the enforcement approach that we will be taking here? Could certainly involve enforcement under the e-privacy regulations themselves, such as through the issuing of enforcement notices. But bear in mind, we do have a very powerful suite of tools available to us also under the GDPR, where, you know, if we are of the view that controllers are processing personal data on foot of or as a result of their use of cookies and tracking technologies, we could also carry out audits and inquiries or investigations and examinations of their wider practices, using our very powerful tools under the GDPR. So that is actually important to say. But in terms of enforcement action, yes, it would be true to say that we do enforce quite regularly. We enforce the privacy regulations as a data protection authority, and we do have controllers in court on a fairly regular basis as a result of non-compliance with the unsolicited communications provisions. But, you know, we can certainly see, and we will be taking enforcement action against controllers who don't comply in this area and who don't make any effort to comply in this area. And while we appreciate that in some cases compliance is going to be quite difficult and tricky, because it's a very, very complex area, and there are very many ways, for example, of perhaps delivering information to users to come to a website. You know, we appreciate that controllers will find it difficult. We want to work with them to help them to be compliant, and we hope our guidance note will bring them down that route towards compliance. But where they're not, after the 5th of October, we will be looking at taking enforcement action, including using our powers under the GDPR and the privacy regulations to enforce.
And I think that's a really important message to reinforce for people, and it's certainly one that we will come back to as we close out of this podcast later on, for the key takeaways for people and the key areas that data controllers in particular need to be aware of. And just before, Elaine, I let you take us through a deep dive on the actual report itself and the findings that emerged, you made reference there to legislation, and particularly the legislation that applies to cookies. And for listeners on information, just to say that we will have that relevant legislation sitting alongside this podcast for their reference. But are there maybe some highlighted areas that you could call out for people that they need to be particularly aware of in relation to the legislation that applies to cookies?
Yeah, so Regulation 5 of the e-privacy regulation is the relevant section of the legislation here. And this transposes Regulation 5 of the e-privacy directive into Irish law. Essentially, the wording is the same. So what the wording is that a person, and this means person as in an individual or a corporate body or an organisation, shall not use an electronic communications network to store information or to gain access to information already stored in the terminal equipment of subscriber or user. So what terminal equipment actually can be there is what it usually means. It's your device, it's your computer, it's your mobile phone. We would also include in that any device that connects to the internet, you know, so-called Internet of Things devices. So any equipment that may have information stored on it, and that information typically here would be cookies, but it can be other tracking technologies, and also which would include the likes of device fingerprinting and software development kits that controllers would be familiar with, and you know, also third-party plugins and so on, such as like buttons that you would see, or social sharing tools that you would see on a lot of websites. These can also access information on a person's device or terminal equipment. And information here means any information. It doesn't actually just apply to personal information. So that's a very important thing to say. And that has been affirmed by the Court of Justice of the European Union. You know, it's quite clear that the legislation does apply to information, whether or not it's personal data. So a cookie that doesn't contain personal data might just be a string of characters, might not necessarily be linked to a particular user. That can become personal information at a later stage when it's combined with other data that a controller processes, for example. So Regulation 5 here also provides that, you know, in relation to the consent provisions, the controller must provide information to users in terms, they must provide clear and comprehensive information to users before they set the cookies. So we found, for example, in this suite that a lot of websites are setting cookies, as in they're accessing or placing information on the user's equipment before that consent is actually given. So when we examined actually what cookies were being set, we could see that cookies were set in the browser, but that the user had not had any opportunity to refuse those cookies or to accept them. And in some cases, those cookies included tracking cookies with very long lifespans. The lifespan of a cookie can actually be set to a particular date. So I think some of the cookies that we saw might persist, as you'd say, on the user's equipment for many, many years. And in some cases, users are not even aware that they're there, because you don't have to be very technical to know how to clear your browser cookies, but some people don't clear them. And as a consequence, these cookies are sitting in their browser, tracking everything that they do. So you visit one website today and it sets a cookie that doesn't expire until 20 years' time. You visit another website, that cookie is still sitting on your equipment, and it is capable of being read then by each website that you visit and when you come back to the previous website. So this combination of kind of tracking can be actually quite intrusive over time. So that is why it's very important for controllers to know that they must obtain the consent of users to this kind of tracking. And also, they should not be setting cookies that have a lifespan that is not proportionate to the function that cookie has. So, for example, a lot of cookies are described as, say, session cookies. So a session cookie might be, for example, used when you go in to shop on a particular website and add something to your shopping basket. That cookie is considered necessary for that particular purpose. It's to store, it's to remember the fact that you put a particular item in your shopping basket, and as you're moving around the site, when you come back, that item is still there in your basket. So those session cookies are important. They help websites to function, but they also disappear when the person leaves their browser. They don't persist. They don't stay there when the person comes back. But there are other cookies that are persistent cookies that are used to track people possibly over time. Those cookies can have very long lifespans. In fact, I've seen one recently where the year of expiry was set to the year 1999, which is the longest expiry date I have ever seen for a cookie, ever. And I have to say that was not one of the controllers in our sweep, but certainly in the course of examining controllers' practices in the future and in taking any enforcement action, we would not expect to see any cookies set by controllers that had expiry dates with essentially infinite lifespans. They must be proportionate to the function that they have. And again, it's probably worth getting in here too, the fact that there are some exemptions. There are two very specific exemptions that many of the larger controllers in particular will be aware of. Exemptions to the nature to get consent, and that is, those two specific exemptions are actually set out in the legislation as well as Regulation 5.5. They're quite technical. The first exemption is known as the communication exemption, and these would be the kind of cookies, for example, that are used to carry out the transmission of a communication over a network. So they might be, for example, load balancing cookies or something like that to identify communication endpoints. There's a second exemption, and these are the ones that more people will probably be aware of. It's called the strictly necessary exemption. So you will often see on websites when you visit them references to cookies that are strictly necessary. these cookies must pass a test or two tests. They apply to a service delivered over the internet, for example. So the service must also have been explicitly requested by the user, and the use of the cookie must be restricted to what is necessary to provide that service. So, for example, cookies related to advertising, and we've outlined this in our report, they are not strictly necessary and they require consent. So advertising cookies and cookies across a range of other types of cookies cannot be described as strictly necessary unless the user has specifically consented to the service that you're providing. And we've set out some examples in our guidance note about the cookies that will, where the exemptions will apply. And I think they're quite good examples. Hopefully the controllers will actually read these and take account of them when they're looking at the kind of cookies that they're using themselves. We certainly came across examples in this week of controllers describing cookies as strictly necessary, where we probably would not consider those cookies meet the exemption, the consent exemption, and we would consider that they do require consent. So if you want me, I can give you kind of an example, which I think came up in a few cases, of cookies that would be described possibly by the controllers as strictly necessary. These would include, for example, if you visit a website, you will see many of them now deploy chatbots, and a little box will pop up to say, please speak to one of our agents here. But if you visit a website and you're simply going to the website to look for an address of the controller or phone number to ring them, we would not consider that a chatbot, for example, is a strictly necessary cookie, that the cookie that is required to make that chatbot function, we could not describe that as strictly necessary unless the user has explicitly requested to engage with the chatbot, for example.
Okay, and do we have maybe an example, just for absolute clarity, of what a strictly necessary cookie would be? What does constitute a strictly necessary cookie?
Yeah, we would give, the one example that I've already used there would be a cookie such as the cookies used to keep track of items that you place in your shopping basket. So these do meet the strictly necessary condition because you've obviously requested the service and you're moving around the website with the view to purchasing something and specifically placing an object in your shopping basket. So those cookies that are required to do that and to allow the website function that way, they are strictly necessary.
And again, they have a specific timeline for their expiration.
Yeah, generally speaking, they will expire when the user closes their browser session or shortly thereafter. They would tend not to live on the browser, so to speak, for a very long period of time.
Great. So the threshold for assessing what is strictly necessary and what we would not consider to be a strictly necessary cookie, that is actually, you know, it's quite a high threshold. And for all other cookies, you would expect to obtain the consent of the user in advance
of
deploying those cookies. So could we maybe talk a little bit about how organizations can go about getting consent for the use of cookies and what kind of practices your team found on the websites that you examined?
Yes, in practice, most organizations, most controllers use cookie banners, I suppose. Everyone will be familiar with these when you visit a website. They're deployed in different ways. There is no one-size-fits-all. They don't have to be done in a particular way. The information doesn't actually have to be presented in a banner to users. But in fact, I suppose this proves the least intrusive way. Most controllers do want to do this in the least intrusive way possible because it is fair to say it does impact on the user's experience when they visit a website. Many people find these banners and pop-ups and so on, interstitial that you see when you visit sites, they find them quite annoying. And, you know, that is understandable. But at the same time, they are presented to people because of the requirement that they give consent to the use of cookies on certain tracking technologies. And I think that's important. And it's interesting to see how controllers deploy them because some of them are more or less intrusive than others. Some of them can actually be quite aesthetically done well. They actually can, I think, enhance the browsing experience, actually. But we found in some cases that the banners were maybe not very visible, or they were designed in such a way that they might blend in to the user interface on a web page, for example, possibly in a slightly misleading way, so that they were designed in such a way as to maybe not have the user engage with the banner or the information at all, that they seem to be there really as a way of a kind of a way of showing, demonstrating compliance, but while at the same time not really making an effort to be compliant. Yeah, exactly. Because the controllers are, they know that they are aware, generally speaking, that they must comply with the law here. But what we found, I think, that the widespread practice was the use of what would be described as implied consent for the use of cookies. And that is where you'll go, come to a website and see a banner that says, we use cookies on this website for whatever purpose. By continuing to use our website, you consent to the use of cookies. And then you will have a single button that says OK or got it, and you click that button or not, as the case may be. That is a model. About two-thirds of the controllers we looked at were using that model of so-called implied consent for the use of cookies, so that when the user continues to engage with the website or click links or to browse pages, then the cookies are set. The banner may or may not disappear at that point, and the user may not have ever engaged with it, but we do not consider that that is valid consent. It doesn't meet the consent requirements under the legislation, and the consent requirements are read in the light of the GDPR, and the consent must be freely given, specific, informed, unambiguous. So we could not consider that implied consent model to meet those requirements. So therefore, the likes of a cookie banner, for example, that appears on a website in whatever way or whatever form, whatever part of the page it appears on, if that banner disappears as soon as you click or scroll, even a minute scroll of your mouse wheel, and that banner disappears and cookies are then set, we would not consider that to be valid consent.
And I think that takes us right back to the point that we've made there previously, and which runs through all of this, that demonstrating compliance means exactly that. That you need, yes, to be able to demonstrate compliance, and that there's a duty of care and a duty of due diligence, if you will, on the data controller to ensure that they're meeting this threshold, and that it won't be viewed as a tick box exercise, because as you've said previously, this is an area that is expanding hugely, and which will continue to expand hugely, particularly in the current climate where we all begin to move into our remote working environments at the moment. We were engaging in a lot more online behaviour. And I know from my own experience as I look around that I see a number of smaller organisations entering into the online ordering world where maybe they previously did not have a presence. And so this guidance is arriving at a really opportune and timely time for them.
It is, and this is actually interesting. It's a very interesting area, in particular for smaller controllers. And I think it would be fair to say that in the course of this sweep, certainly we covered some very large, prominent household names, but we also looked at some smaller websites. And it is mentioned in our report, which is on our website, particularly, say, the food ordering sector stood out for us, I think, as an area where compliance is problematic is probably the word I would use for it, in the sense that the responses we got back to our sweep questionnaire, we sent out a very extensive questionnaire as part of the sweep on the 15th of August, and it took us several months to go through the responses. We found that the responses from these smaller controllers in particular, I think, were poor. There was a lack of understanding, really, of the requirements of the legislation, and in particular, there was a lack of understanding of the fact that these controllers might actually also be processing personal data as a result of their use of cookies, and that's a very important thing. In some cases, smaller controllers, for example, may not manage their own websites, they may not develop them, they may not maintain them, they may actually pay a third-party provider to do this for them. And there are services out there where, you know, for maybe just several hundred euros a year, controllers can pay a third-party to do this for them. And you will often see these kind of off-the-shelf type websites where they're similar websites for a particular sector, for example, but they're all off the shelf provided by a third party. Now, we need to make it clear that where those controllers are using cookies, they are responsible for their websites. They can't outsource responsibility for compliance to the third party. The third party here may actually be maybe a processor or maybe a joint controller, and they need to examine those relationships very, very carefully. So contracts must be put in place where, for example, if a small controller has a website and is using a third party to provide that, they must be very, very clear about where the responsibilities lie here and what the controller and potentially joint controller or the processor relationships are. So we would also be examining contracts, for example, if it comes down to a deeper dive into people's compliance with the legislation here. They will also have to comply with GDPR, where they're processing personal information, so personal data. So they will have to have the relevant contracts in place with any third-party providers there to ensure that the responsibilities for who is responsible for and who is deciding on the means and the purposes of the processing, for example, to ensure that that's compliant.
And I'm conscious that many of the organisations who are listening to this podcast today may actually be of those smaller smaller to medium enterprises. And as they listen to what we're saying here, I can almost sense the anxiety levels rising, where it seems like there are so many things that they need to do in order to be compliant, in order to have a website, in order to have oversight of and provide that assurance to the regulator and to their customers that they are operating in compliance with the regulation and with the Data Protection Act. But it's also fair to say, and I'll come back to it again, I know we've mentioned it several times, but you have done the heavy lifting on this. You have produced the guidance to enable people to actually start from where they are at and to lead them through this compliance process, and that's what sits on the website. Elaine, thank you for taking us through that in such detail this morning, because I think there's a lot of information here that's very, very relevant to people, and it's certainly an important starting point for those controllers who really need to engage with their compliance obligations in relation to websites, and particularly in relation to tracking user activity. And one of the key points, I think, that has really been hammered home here this morning is that it is not a responsibility that can be outsourced. It still sits with the data controller themselves. But following on from this, can you maybe take us through what the next steps will be in terms of this cookie sweep? What are the outcomes and what the landscape looks like for the next 6 months?
Yes, well, now bearing in mind that we have essentially given controllers a six-month deadline within which to comply with our new guidance, and we are now in the process of contacting representative bodies, for example, across a range of sectors, to assist us in disseminating the results of our sweep and the guidance notes that we have produced. We would like representative bodies, say, in the business sectors, in various other sectors, to get that guidance out to their members and to make them aware of it. Even though we have published it on our website, we would like to seek the assistance of the relevant bodies here who can help us to get the message out there to controllers. So what we would like is that the guidance note we've produced should be read by all controllers who operate websites and mobile websites and so on, and who use cookies and tracking technologies. That should be examined in conjunction with the report we have produced. We also will be examining other websites. So over and above the 40 or the 38 controllers that we looked at in this sweep, we are now actively looking at websites on a daily basis. This may happen on an ad hoc basis as we come across particular issues, but we will be adding to what will probably be a very, very long list of controllers that we will be writing to about potential compliance issues on their websites, where we identify areas of concern to us, where, for example, we consider that there is tracking activity or cookies activity on the website that is being conducted without the consent of users. So controllers should be expected to hear from us, and that means across a range of sectors, including all the sectors we examined here in this particular sweep, but also in others. So over the coming months, we're going to be very, very active in following up with controllers, A, the ones who participated in the sweep, and secondly, we will be following up with other controllers, and people can very much expect to be hearing from us, especially after the 5th of October, where we find there are issues of non-compliance. We will certainly be looking at taking enforcement action, and that may very well include inquiries, inspections, audits, or other enforcement action. So we would urge controllers to start looking at that guidance now and to sit down with the relevant people in their organisation or outside their organisations to see how they can go about bringing themselves into compliance where they're not currently.
So that's an important next step for controllers, that on foot of this information that they've received, on foot of the guidance note, the podcast and the report itself, that it's now a key stage for them, as you say, to sit down with the relevant people in their own organisation, any third-party providers that they use, and start an audit of all the cookies and the tracking activity that they currently undertake. And I suppose Elaine, is it worth calling out at this stage that there's a particular need for data controllers to focus on transparency on how they're presenting this information to users who visit their website?
Yes, I think transparency is key, and obviously transparency is a very key provision in the legislation, in data protection legislation, generally speaking, in the general data protection regulation. And clear and transparent information, clear and comprehensive information is the wording that's used in the regulation, for example, but that will be read in light of the transparency requirements in the GDPR now. So the kind of information that must be provided by controllers, they should really read the relevant provisions of the GDPR to see what they should be providing to be behind the scenes, for example, in their cookies notice, in their privacy policy, but up front in their cookie banner, in their whatever way they choose to present information to users when they come to visit the site first, that information should be clear, it should be transparent, and it shouldn't try to hide anything about the activities that are going on the website. There are challenges in how to present that, and we understand it. There are different ways of presenting the information, and there are probably different ways of layering the information so that people get the information they need without information overload up front on a page when they land on a website. But transparency is going to be key, and, you know, again, I hope that our guidance will assist controllers in how to go about being transparent about what they're doing with cookies and tracking technologies, but it just needs to be clear to them that this is an area where they must comply and that they do require consent for this activity, that there's no question of controllers being allowed to continue with widespread tracking activity, where they may also be combining this tracking activity with other information they're processing, other personal data that they're processing. There's no question of them being allowed to do that without consent or without a lawful basis, and there's no question that we will be enforcing on this area and in this area from the 5th of October on.
And I think that's been very, very clear throughout the course of the guidance, the report, and your contribution to this podcast this morning. And to reiterate, I suppose we'll bring us back to that again, what really runs through it is the message that the responsibility and the accountability for this function is something that cannot be outsourced. That's
exactly
right. With the data controller. And Elaine, just as we're moving towards the end of this podcast now, in addition to that notion that accountability cannot be outsourced and that it's something that still fits with the data controller, if there was a key takeaway that you wanted listeners to leave with today, what would it be?
I think it has to be really clear enough to controllers and to listeners that consent is required for cookies. That is the very simplest possible takeaway that I can leave you with, that controllers cannot presume that they can use tracking activity or cookies on their website without consent. They must get consent for the use of those cookies.
Okay. That's something that they really need to familiarise themselves with, the implications for the tools that they deploy on their website. Elaine, thank you very much for your contribution today. We really, really appreciated you drilling down into that report for people, particularly considering the length of the report, how detailed the actual guidance itself is, and to remind anyone who is listening that the guidance, the report, the pieces of legislation that have been referred to, and the judgment that Elaine made reference to in terms of Planet 49, links to all of those will sit alongside the podcast, so that people can refer back to them at a later date and so that they can dig in and out of them. With that, I think we draw to a close where we are today in relation to the cookies sweep report that the DPC has published. If anyone has queries in relation to this coming in from the DPO network, they can email them in to dponetwork@dataprotection.ie and we will address them there. Maybe there may even, Elaine, be need for a follow-up podcast in relation to this, depending on the queries that arrive, so we might trespass on your goodwill again.
I expect you have a very full inbox pretty soon.
I think we just might, but hopefully it will cover off exactly what people need in order to drive compliance, which is our focus here at the DPC.
Exactly.
And with that one, Elaine, I'd like to thank you again. We're going to close out and to wish everyone well in our current climate, and hope that everyone keeps safe. Thank you very much.